after many years of trying to quit, I just finished 3 years of sobriety from alcohol in December. I'm telling people what to do because I've been broke. I've been homeless. I've lived in motels. I've lived in extended stays. I've not had a vehicle and lived in a cabin. Like, I've lived those lives and I've bounced back.
We were either radically one way or we're radically the other way and not simply finding the balance. And this applies to both genders. Mm-hmm. It's like, you need balance in order to have a structured life and a life with impact and efficacy.
A marketing campaign on a billboard isn't enough anymore. You have to have actions and you have to live what you're saying.
When people hear what you do, what do they usually misunderstand about you?
They misunderstand me as a salesman because that's how I start, or broke. That's another term that gets used for things, and it's really not.
I think a lot of times as CEOs, especially small business owners, we get so caught up in running the business that we forget about the people that are helping us run that. You know, that can get really heavy at times.
The hardest part that makes me unique, and this is not an ego statement, it's a way I go about my businesses, I actually do directly to their face question whether or not they want to continue doing this.
If you're new here, welcome. I'm excited that you joined us. Every single week, I get to sit down with CEOs, leaders, founders, builders who are doing something really fantastic on the planet. They're building a business that's making a difference in other people's lives. And I get the opportunity to sit down and chat with them and learn how they're doing it. The lessons, the failures, the opportunities, and they're going to leave you and me every single week with some nugget, many nuggets actually, that you can integrate, implement into your business to do the same thing. So I'm glad you're here. Sit back. Let's get into it.
All right. Welcome back to the Brand Laboratorium. I guess it is Nate Folkman. Am I saying that right? Folkman?
Fochtman.
Yep. I already asked you in the green room and I fucked it up already. Nate Fochtman. I was on Nate's show a couple of weeks ago with Clifford Starks, and we hit it off. He's the founder of the Free Mind Group. You actually have multiple podcasts, right?
Yeah, two, Ready to Drink and Leaders Arena.
Yeah, and he works with founders and operators similar to I do, who are carrying more than most people do, and sort of helps them make meaning of all that in a sort of like, I'm dumbing that down. So we're going to learn exactly what you do in a minute. But I guess what I appreciate about what you do, Nate, is I think on the surface, when I first was sort of reading your bio kit and going to your website, it looks a lot like strategy, media, and systems. But underneath, it's really sort of about identity, pressure, inflection points, sustainability, and really helping people, partnering with your clients to help them navigate through some of the treacheries that they're facing. That's sort of a better way that I, at least that's how I read between the lines. Is that correct?
You're exactly right. It's what I do is basically, I just call it like an onion. It's just, there's a lot of layers to it. And I dive as deep as I need to based on the client's custom needs. And I only scale myself. I'm a solopreneur for 17 years. I started this business in 2008. And I intentionally have it at a capacity that everything's one-on-one. Mm. My teams that do different things that come in, and 1099 contractors I bring them in for certain projects like an A-team. But at the end of the day, the client is always facing me. I don't build buffers between me and the client. I consider it a founder operator engine.
So what would you say, knowing what you know about yourself and knowing what I do, what's the difference between what we're doing and what we're offering?
There's not a whole lot as far as certain things go. I don't know yet about like what industries you work with specifically, but my niche that I've drilled into the most to go deep into is adult beverages. Mm-hmm. So I work within the regulated market of alcohol, cannabis, functional and non-alcoholic.
Interesting.
And working within those adult beverage spaces, that's allowed me to drill down deeply, but also get such a wide range of different founders, mm-hmm. while also not spreading myself too thin as far as, which I used to do in the past 17 years. So my business has been an evolution of distractions and focus.
Yeah. Well, then don't outshine me on this podcast and sound smarter than me, because if we have the same audience, man, this is my show. So don't be stealing anything from me.
Hey, listen, us bald bearded beauties are very interchangeable. We need to really come to terms with this. All right.
It's a reckoning. Fair enough. Betty, you'll actually appreciate this. A few weeks ago, actually it was a few months. I lose track of time, man. Time really is speeding up. I don't know if you've heard this theory that time has sped up since basically 2012. Have you heard this?
Oh, yeah.
It really has sped up, because weeks are actually months for me and months are actually years, I have found out. I'll be like giving a store to someone and my daughter will be like, Dad, that wasn't a week ago. That was like 8 months ago. I'm like, wait, what? Anyway, I was invited to, it was the Bearded Only Guys convention group or something. And they do a monthly consortium where they have, you can only be bald and bearded, and you get to deliver a 20-minute keynote on whatever you want. And anyway, I was invited to do a keynote on it, and it was pretty funny because every speaker that came up, it was like an all-day webinar, and everybody was bald and bearded. We all basically looked the same, like we came from the same gene pool. It was like, I'm like, what what's the homogeneity complex here? What happened here? So anyway.
It always feels awkward when there's too many of us in a room. It feels like something's going to blow up or something's going to happen. So much condensed beard in right there.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. When people hear what you do, what do they usually misunderstand about you?
They misunderstand me as a sales rep, because that's how I started, and or a broker. That's another term that gets used for things, and it's really not. And it's not even a strategist, because I work with founders directly as a founder. I don't just come in with a textbook. I literally don't have textbooks. I don't have handouts. Everything is in the moment and goes through what it is, just like what you experienced on my podcast. I'll use an example. I do a leadership coaching as well for a couple different, C-suite executives, and they're just blown away because they're used to like a checklist consultant, coming in and doing this stuff. And I come in with my notebook, my pages are blank, and they're like, "Where are we going?" And I'm like, "I don't know. You're driving." I said, "This is your journey, man. I'm just sitting shotgun."
Yeah.
And when we open things up that way, the vulnerability comes down, the guard comes down. And then all of a sudden they're more open to things and the honesty comes out, and there's nothing that can be taught in those textbooks to handle the situational management from an emotional standpoint, a professional standpoint, to kind of drive those conversations and get the real story. Because when you learn how to grow and grow your business and grow yourself, you have to grow with your business. You can't just go and book $20 million worth of jobs and then never evolve as a human being. Mm-hmm. And so that's the challenge where I step in, is I'm in that delta where I help people understand the pressures and the time that's going to be happening to get to that scale, and help them with the mechanics, but most of all, keeping them grounded in humility and understanding the passion and purpose and why they did the things they did, so they don't get lost when things get complicated. Because that's the hardest scale when you jump up as a founder to then having an infrastructure and having certain volume. The business feels like it's out of your control, and that's sometimes where founders break down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I call that intersection between personal development and professional alignment. And it is that identity inflection. And I think a lot of people hear that sometimes and they're like, "Oh, this is a bunch of woo and existentialism." But when you actually practically and pragmatically break it down and you ask people to sort of tell you their story and how they got there and why they do the things they do and why they have the beliefs that they have and the philosophies, not a lot of people are able to articulate that. And so when they're not able to articulate it, it's not necessarily because they are not able to like articulate it. It's because they've never actually done the deeper understanding and the meaning behind who they are. So when you're doing this work with people, are they assuming that it's something like I just described, or are they assuming it's something different? But then once they start the work, the light bulb goes off?
An example, exactly. It's in the middle of the way. And there's also, the light bulb can go off two ways. I actually just had one where I actually had to cancel a contract with a client because I actually had to put the boundary down, because we got to a place in our sessions where there was a refusal by the person who I was coaching, because they weren't a founder necessarily. It was a C-suite scenario. Mm-hmm. And in that C-suite scenario, it's a little different than dealing with founders. So sometimes it can turn into what becomes exposed when you pull that veil back, is they come to realize I'm only here for the paycheck. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened in our sessions. We got five sessions in, and all of a sudden he realized, he's like, "I don't have a passion for this place."
Mm-hmm.
That's the power, though, where the uncomfortable part is, where if you can help somebody find their true purpose and direction in life, that's the joy. It's better than any money I can make.
One of the things I have found when I'm working with, you're calling them C-suite executives, but just small businesses in general that have teams that report to them, is it's not necessarily always an identity inflection that they're suffering from. There's a culture problem. And that culture.
And actually, that was 50-50 of the other apps. As we went through everything, he realized, he's like, "I don't need to deal with all this bullshit."
Yeah, well, and then the culture problem starts with them. And if they really step back, and it's not like they're being pernicious or evil or they're just bad bosses. It's sometimes that they're so caught up in being a leader that they forgot that there's an HR aspect. There's a human aspect to running a business. If you're going to run a business and you have people that are working for you, running your business with you, for you, whatever it is, I think a lot of times as CEOs, especially small business owners, we get so caught up in running the business that we forget about the people that are helping us run that. And, that can get really heavy at times. And so a lot of times I have found when I'm in those types of projects that we have to take a step back before we even do any of the identity work, any of the alignment work, any of the strategy around the brand story and the messaging, is we have to sort of understand what the culture looks like and how is it supporting what you actually want to build here. And if there's a gap there, we have to close that gap. So I guess it sounds like you're doing something similar to that. If you don't mind telling me, just sort of swapping trade stories, how do you go about changing a culture for an organizational leader that is completely blissfully unaware that he has or she has a culture problem in the first place?
The hardest part that makes me unique, and this is not an ego statement, it's a way I go about my businesses, I actually do directly to their face question whether or not they want to continue doing this. And when you ask a founder or somebody who's in a high level position and you question them and you put the mirror in front of them, there's times where founders have been like, you know what? I want to step back and be a chairman. I need to get out of the operations. That's the band-aid. So a lot of this comes from me personally. I learned how to do this through rehab and through sobriety and recovery. And what it is facing what you can control and what you can't control. And when you become bigger and you scale up your business, you're going to have your early adopters and you're going to have your friends and family that have been around since the beginning and your first employees. Those people will go through fire for you. They'll run through brick walls for you. But as you get bigger, the employees don't always become in a passionate place as much as they become a functional piece. Mm-hmm. And when somebody becomes a functional piece, the emotion becomes out. And when the emotion comes out, they just become cogs in a machine and the mechanics. And that's when the humanization of the organizational structure breaks down. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to bring back is not a bleeding heart, victimhood, like everybody needs to be family and corporate. That's actually the opposite of what I do, but it's a respect. Because naturally, and it's never intentional. Founders don't intentionally disrespect their employees or overthink it. Founders have a lot of trouble not believing that everybody in the organization is as passionate as they are thinking about and wanting to make the business better. And I think that's sometimes the challenge to understand that people are coming from different places of experience and different perspectives and interpretations of where their future is going to go.
So back to that question, when you're fixing culture, what's the first thing you think you have to do?
The first thing you have to do is you do a culture audit. And through that culture audit is spontaneous conversations with the employees, as well as with the founder in separate situations. And it's not like a office space scenario where the consultants come in and it's like, so tell me what you do at your job, Jim. And it's like, well, and that's not what it is. There's specific probing questions that I have that those parts, when I walk through those 10 to 15 questions, they tell me the entire story of the business. And then I verify it by asking, it's a very qualitative and quantitative kind of research. And then you verify that same theory throughout the other employees. And then after you have a few employees answering the same questions, from my end, before I even talk to the founder, it doesn't matter what the founder thinks of the business. I know what the employee's perspective of the business is. And then I go to the founder, go through the same questionnaire. And now I have a complete forest from the trees picture. And I can also see the delta detachment of where the breakdown is.
Interesting.
It's very hands-on. It's not nothing that at this moment the digital world can at least do and yet.
So you made a couple of references on some of the work that you've had to do on yourself, serving as the sort of guiding light for what you're doing now professionally. Do you mind if we ask what some of that stuff is? Like what?
Absolutely.
What were you involved in? What was the area of troubles for your life? Yeah. What did you go through? What did you learn?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm 21 years in the alcohol business. I started when I was 19 years old. And it was one of those things that in the alcohol business, especially back then, not so much now, but it was a very heavy drinking culture. Mm. I also came from a very heavy drinking family. It was never anything where anything spiraled out. Everything was always manageable and everybody was always high functional, but it was always the volume. The volume was very excessive. And eventually over time, you know, you can sustain that for a long time and you can close bars every night and still show up in the boardroom at 6 a.m. I did it. You know, you're still reeking of booze, but you work in the industry. So it's actually just normalized. And then when you get in there, the crazy part is you're sitting at your desk and at 8 a.m., 10 a.m., the next craft brewery comes in. They bring their samples. They want to sample with you. They want to take you out to lunch. You know, you could have 4 to 7 beers before you even got home. And, you know, God forbid you had a happy hour on the way home too. What happened eventually was that access and that normalization brought forward the final exposure for me of my addictive personality that I had known for a long time, but it had to hit a certain volume boil over point. And that accelerated it to about 3 years ago. After many years of trying to quit, I just finished 3 years of sobriety from alcohol in December. And in the past 3 years, I've restructured my entire business to be that support system for those people to understand from their position, not from a place of diagnosis of hey, I'm telling you to do this because this is what I'm seeing over here. I'm telling people what to do because I've been broke. I've been homeless. I've lived in motels. I've lived in extended stays. I've not had a vehicle and lived in a cabin. Like I've lived those lives and I've bounced back from it. And therefore I can tell them from my experience. That's why I don't have textbooks. That's why there's no PDFs. They come out as a deliverable after our sessions, but they're not coming in because every single person's experience is different than the next. The joke is in my world, you know, those people that want to ostracize certain people and call them snowflakes, it's the truest statement ever, because we are. We are all uniquely different. We have different curves. We have different things. And those little curves over the course of our life has changed our perspective and lens on our life. You and I could grow up in the same town, have shaved heads, be big, burly dudes with beards, but we could see completely different times. We're not always going to see it. It's not going to be all day long. But there's going to be things where we can see them completely differently, and we'll never be able to see it until we set ourselves in each other's shoes and learn each other's story so we can see how we got to those perceptions.
When it comes to leadership, I always find this to be a sticky question for a lot of people, and everybody has a different point of view on it. I'm curious more about how your view of leadership has changed as you've transitioned into this new role and after having those experiences that altered your life. What belief about leadership in terms of how you viewed it yesterday versus how you view it today has shifted or maybe become more clear for you over time?
We do, as a society in the United States, I'll speak of specifically, and I'll speak in my industry at least, and I know it's the case for other industries. My degree and where I went to college, marketing, it was a big thing. My degree specifically is in corporate communications and public relations. I am from the academic side of things. Of you have your face in the corporate world and you have your face at home. That's how you lead. You tell people bullshit and you go home and say something completely different to your wife or your husband. That's the world we lived in. The veil is gone. That we used to sit here and we create these national campaigns and spend millions of dollars on authenticity and organic growth, but we were never really truly exposing ourselves. That's where this is different now. My free mind, Nate, is Nate. And Nate is free mind. And the thing about that is that's what we put forward. And when I get people to understand that you are everything in every part of your day, they can be their truer selves. And it sounds woo-woo and universal, and I get that. And I'm all about that stuff as well. But when it comes to a practicality, the bullshit of having a mask on and going to work and then coming home feeling differently, it's not sustainable. And I think as a society, we're becoming aware of that now, that we're like, I can't keep going for another 20 years of smiling at this guy and then taking a paycheck every Thursday. There's got to be something more in this. Like the amount of stories I hear from people where it's that, and it's helping them guide that journey and understand you don't have to burn the bridge and burn the house down on the way out, but you really have to understand what it is that's going to drive you. Because when there's no purpose and it's just a paycheck, that's the choice. Is do you want to do it for the paycheck or do you want to change your life and find something different? But knowing that changing your life is going to be hard as fuck. And that's the thing too, is being real with people and showing them and telling them stories. I am very vulnerable in my sessions and tell people, here's this scenario. Here's this where I did this. And here's where I screwed up on this. And that I think is enough as the society, and especially in leadership, the thing that makes it different is our words aren't enough anymore. A marketing campaign on a billboard isn't enough anymore. You have to have actions and you have to live what you're saying now, because we are all so exposed that nobody's dealing with the bullshit anymore. That's a reason podcasts have become so popular, is because it brought the there's a reason we don't see actors and actresses running podcasts. And I know no dig on that industry, but it's one of those things where it's like their career is built on being that type of character versus personal. So there's that natural guard of it. And I came from the theater side of things. I was in plays. That's why I'm not speaking ill of it. But that's a different way of living. Whereas now we just come on with no questions, no script, and we got to be real.
So what I heard you say, if I may paraphrase that, is that it's not just a shift in how you work. It's sort of how you measure your own worth by how you're showing up inside the work. It's sort of like, is that a fair statement?
Every hour of every day is the same. So what it is now it's the same decision. Uh-huh. It's not, I got to do this for work anymore. It's like, I got to do this because I have to do this.
So less
you
about
can't separate them. Yeah.
So it's less about carrying something or carrying everything, if you will, and more about building something that holds you in the sense that you are the brand.
And that's ultimately the ultimate accountability.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I think it is as well, is as leaders, we realize recently in the past few years, especially me, I realized that there's leaders that lead and follow and step in the foot and roll their sleeves up. And there's leaders that don't. Mm-hmm. And the leaders that don't are really good at the PR part. You know, we see this a lot in our society today where it's like all of a sudden we find out all this information about people and we're like, holy shit. Well, it's like, well, no, they're just really good at the public image. And and that's where when you blur those lines, that's when people become vulnerable. And that's when you truly can tell who's real and who's just a vapid individual that is just living.
You've had these experiences that over time have shifted the way you view the world. They've shifted how you think. They've shifted how you operate. They've shifted in how you philosophically believe things to be. I'm wondering, do you expect that you could have more shifts in how you operate given the experiences you're having now, and a year from now we're having a different conversation? Or do you feel like sort of what you believe in now is the right way to believe in things?
In this moment that we're speaking of today, it feels like the moment of where we are.
Uh-huh.
But I'd be ignorant to not be looking at history and looking at the evolution of society and psychological evolution and things like that, and tell you that a year or two from now, things wouldn't change either. The problem is when we don't adapt and we don't evolve and grow, we're square pegging, round holing. So if I was to tell you right now, yeah, I'll be doing the same thing 5 years from now, I can't even tell you the business would look the same way 5 years from now. But that's the niche I chose. See, that's the difference is that's not the same for every business. There are certain businesses, yeah, you can forecast, you can build security, but I choose to be in this place because there's a delta where I know that my experience has helped me so much to help other people in unique places where the universal textbook style stuff doesn't work for them.
You're not one of those Bobs from The Office Space is what I hear you saying.
No, that's exactly what I mean. It's the opposite of that. And I love that. That's why I made the joke in the beginning. I was like, what do you say you do at your job every day? Well, Bob, I don't do anything all day, you know, stuff like that. And then Bob's just sitting there with his survey and he's filling out his survey. And that's not me. You know?
Yeah, it's a funny movie. What are some of the next big decisions that you're working on right now?
Right now is a shift from, we were doing a lot of front end sales and distribution where we work with distributors, sell product in for different brands. Mm. And then in the past year, it's been a lot of shifting to this strategy and coaching and stuff like that. That has been an overwhelming amount of input inbound that people are like, I want this, I want this. And it started a couple of weeks ago with my LinkedIn, to be honest with you. I started actually writing in my newsletter that I'd started, a year ago, never did anything with. I had like 700 people that I wasn't communicating to. And then a couple of weeks ago, I just started writing my thoughts every morning at 8 a.m. and putting it out there. And then people started sharing it a couple of weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, the LinkedIn grew and it's like 40,000 a month of organic views and all this stuff. And I'm like, that's cool. And that's the plan. And I was always discouraged because I've been in social media my entire career. I was in 2008, I was standing in boardrooms with a suit on, trying to convince corporations in the alcohol industry to have Facebook pages. And I was literally laughed out of the rooms saying, that's stupid. And look where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that resilience. I never gave up. Mm-hmm. And I've always been on social media, always using stories to sell and never selling anything, just showing people what it is that's there and letting people choose whether or not they want it and not caring if they didn't choose it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people lose sight of the fact that it's called social media for a reason. And it's not a selling platform. Yes. Everybody knows we're out there to sell. I mean, come on. We're not just showing up on social media to share our voice for no reason. Like it's an implied logic. But if you come at it from, at least this is my point of view, and I'm right, wrong, or indifferent. If you come at it from the point of view that you're just constantly bombarding people with selling something, it's just obtrusive. Like for me, social media is a tool to connect with people. Mm-hmm. It's a tool to share your little version of the world and how you operate and how you view things. And in the process of doing so, you connect with other people who also align with that. And those could become your clients, those become your friends, they could become podcast guests, etc. But the whole point is to position yourself in whatever area that you want to position yourself and then align with people who are sort of in that same congruent space. You agree or disagree?
I 100% agree. And that's exactly the context to these newsletters. I'm not just writing articles about, here's what I think about this. I'm writing it in my direct, rough, gruff mentality, which is like, if you don't believe in this, I really don't care. And it's like, this is what I think of because of this. And that's what's drawing people in is it's actually retracting the people that aren't serious. And it's bringing in the people that are serious because they're like, oh, I like the way this guy talks. Mm-hmm. This guy's no bullshit. Mm-hmm. And because that's also important for me because in my relationships with my clients over the past 17 years, I've had relationships that I had to sever and disappear. And some of them were their fault and some of them were my fault because I didn't set the perception of myself correctly in the front. So when my real true self came out, they were taken back.
Mm.
And that was when that started happening, I saw the pattern. And that's when it was like, I got to just be myself from the jump, set the expectation and then let that be the filtration. Cause I'm an intense guy. Like I'm very intense. And when I sign you on as a client, I'm your partner.
Mm.
Like I'm not just checking in on weekdays. I'm watching online, making sure nobody's talking shit about you. Like I'm in.
Mm.
And that's when that intensity, sometimes if you're not very self-confident and you're kind of a small dick syndrome, you don't like me. I repel those people and it becomes a very bad relationship when it ends. And I accept it afterwards. And I know That's my fault, but not my fault that I need to change. That's my fault because I didn't set the expectation on the jump.
Mm-hmm. You just took the show from no, this is not for kids only show episode. Thank you.
You did it to me, by the way. I just realized that too.
When MD is doing our shows, when he first started producing our shows on YouTube, he came back and he asked me the question, do I check this is not for this is for kids or not for kids? I was like, bro, did you listen to the episode?
Yeah.
What do you
and actually, to be honest with you, don't cut it because I want more men to hear other men say that. Yeah. I think more men need to understand that we're on to you.
I started a men's group here in Charlotte for a variety of reasons. One of the things that I was uncovering, and I tend to work with a lot of men for whatever reason. One of the things that I was uncovering in the process is how lonely men are and how they don't have an audience. They don't have a platform. They don't have a group. They don't have a community. And there is a conscious attack on the, if I may be political for a minute, there is a conscious attack on the central male figure right now in Western society. And there's a lot of confusion on how men are supposed to show up. I mean, it's self-evident every single day. And I'm curious if you agree with that, first and foremost. And secondly, what's your take on that?
So I have two takes on it. One is I completely understand the original cause, okay, of why that needed to occur. The problem I have with it in the current state is that it's too broad-stroked. Mm. And to be really honest, there are a lot of us that I'm honest about this and I talk about it on my show. I lived parts of my life where I was that piece of shit guy.
Mm.
I was that. I've been divorced twice. You know what I mean? I'm open about that. And the fact is, I can look at those men with disgust now because I'm not that person. And I haven't been that person in years. I don't even recognize that person. And now that's where I do have a problem because there is a broad stroke to it where it's like that. Oh, that's that. And here is me for an example. You know, we're on a screen here. I'm bald, beard. I'm 260 pounds. I'm 6'3". I got tattoos all over me. We know what perception is given to me. What people don't realize is, and they'll look at our me and Clifford show, for example. He's a former UFC Bellator fighter. He's in the USA MMA Hall of Fame. But we've cried on our episodes together with other men talking about things in our lives.
Mm.
I am come from a very masculine blue collar family, a blue collar community. I grew up in West Virginia and Philadelphia, very hard blue collar areas. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, I spent a lot of time being called names when I was growing up. I was called faggot. I was called gay. I was called whatever else. And those things, though, don't bother me. But at the same time, it's the funny part about people don't realize that there's a division within the men. Like, we're not all like that. There's a lot of us that have this own infighting in the locker rooms when we're growing up or when for me, I was a captain of the wrestling team. I was on the football team, a captain of the football team, and I was in theater. And I was in the band and I wrote poetry in the woods. Yeah. And other men were like, what the fuck? Like, what is going on here? And that's where we need more people to realize that, like, we're not great humans and we're not angels by any means, but there is a division within the men. And I think we can stop. We are at the point now where we can stop broad stroking it and start more customizing the direction in which we project that stuff.
Yeah, it's a much deeper conversation. I'd be interested to have that with you because I think there's a lot of subtleties and nuances to it. It's not just a simple codification of trying to intentionally bring men down per se, but I think there are other layers that have added to it. And because of the confusion around it, I think it's actually sowing more anarchy between sort of the view of what we are and who we are, because men don't really know how to show up. And because of the sensitivity issue, we're not really sure what to say, what's our place anymore. We're trying to be, anyway, this is a separate conversation. So I won't go down that rabbit hole.
No, but it is all important. And, you know, even I'll go back to make fun of myself in the dating world. You know, when I was in the dating space, I would be so slow to make any gestures or anything like that because of exactly what you said. And then, like, weeks later or months later, you know, the person you're dating or whatever, they'd be like, hey, you know, you took a really long time for that first kiss or this or that. And it's like, it does make it challenging to be able to read situations and not overcompensate for those hesitations and caution. And not, it's confusing. It is confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a delicate balance. In either direction you look at it, it's a delicate balance, right? You know, that masculine,
it is.
That masculine and feminine energy. I don't think a lot of men... We're going on to a different rabbit hole, but I don't think a lot of men understand the necessity around having the balance of both feminine and masculine and sort of that yin and the yang. Because, I mean, if you were to bring it down to just one simple binary problem, that is the binary problem in of itself. It's like, we were either radically one way or we're radically the other way, and not simply finding the balance. And this applies to both genders, if I may be so bold to say. Mm-hmm. It's like you need balance in order to have a structured life and a life with impact and efficacy. You can't. Anyone who has a radical disposition one way or the other, as far as I'm concerned, is off going off on a derailed track. But we can take this for a separate conversation.
You're good.
Yeah. This was a really grounded conversation. I appreciate you taking the time to jump on the lab with me today, man. Appreciate it. If people want to connect with you, what's the best way to find you?
FMGstrategy.com. Check me out on LinkedIn, Nate Fochtman on LinkedIn. FreeMind Nate on social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and then on YouTube, the FreeMind group. And you'll see, I think there's like 700 videos on there now. And it's about my YouTube channel has been with me for most of my career. So if you really want to have some fun and check me out, when I used to book bands when I started the business, and I was in the back of the thing recording with remember the split cams, those white things?
Yeah.
Those videos are still on my YouTube. So if you want to scroll real far, go on back 10, 15 years of my YouTube channel.
So you were involved with the music industry, you said?
That's how the business started, is I booked live music and stuff like that. And then I started meeting distilleries and breweries while I was working in the industry and then doing that. And then very quickly, it turned into working directly with brands, distributors, and doing all this type of founder type stuff right off the bat. But yeah, I was booking bands around the Mid-Atlantic region. I have about 30 different bands. Yeah.
I saw a brand new band last night in Greensboro, which is about 2 hours from us. It's Shane and the Saints, I think they're called. Have you heard of them before?
Oh, very cool. I'll have to check them out.
Dude, just marvelous. I guess they were sort of like one of the cover bands for the TV show Yellowstone.
Okay.
So when I went back and looked, I was like, oh yeah, I remember seeing them on the show. But anyhow, they say they're country. They're from Texas. I would not call this country. It was more of like rock country fusion, if you will, but
yeah,
what a show they put on. Just brilliant band. And just thought I'd give them a shout out.
No, I'm a big live music advocate, and still am. And I started the business, and I only changed because the industry changed.
Cool. All right, Nate, thank you for your time. Any place, anyone who's listening wants to connect with Nate, all that information will be in the show notes below. So just kind of wherever you scramble down or scroll down, that's where you find it. Dude, appreciate your time. Thanks for being here, brother.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right, that's it for today, folks. Thank you. If this episode hit you, like it, subscribe it, leave a review. It helps a lot more than you think, and it helps the right people find this show and help us keep growing so we can continue to produce amazing episodes. You can find me at thebrandstoryteller.com if you're interested in connecting with me. And everything else about this episode, the guest, the websites, the social media handles, they are all linked below. I'll see you in the next show.